Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi.
And welcome to The Climax.
We didn't even practice that. It was perfect.
No, I mean, ideal. I'm Angelica Malin.
I'm Rebecca Reed.
What are we? Who are we?
We're better known as Bex and Jelly.
Yeah.
And we are the presenters. Hosts? Presenters? What are you for a podcast?
I think we're co-hosts.
We are the co-hosts of The Climax. We're also staring at each other a lot. And we're the co-hosts of The Climax, which is a brand new podcast about sex.
Fantastic. And when we're not co-hosts of The Climax, we're journalists.
And
loosely journalists.
And authors.
Some days I don't
and
think I can.
Travel writers, and you do all sorts of stuff.
Event hosting. I'm a multi-hyphen. I'm very trendy at the moment.
I am also a multi-hyphen.
We're on brand.
Mostly because none of my single hyphens make me enough money. So, and I guess the big question is, why should you listen to us talking about sex?
Yeah, why on earth are we doing this? Why are we doing this, Bexy?
So, when Jelly and I were in our very early 20s, when we were babies, not real babies, we started a sex magazine called AFT, which was amazing, and we loved it and it was brilliant, but then our careers went in different ways and we had lots of other things going on, but we have always had a hankering to talk about sex.
Mm.
And I think we've always had a lot to say about sex. We've always had a lot to say about the way that sex is represented, the way it's treated, and I think that this is a much cooler, fancier, newer medium to get our feelings
about sex. Yeah, I think
out.
When we were doing AFT, podcasts were not a thing, were they?
But do you know what else? Talking about sex was not a thing.
That's true.
Well, there were people who didn't want to work with us because we did it. Our families were pretty shocked. Whereas now, I think in the 5 years since we started AFT, things have changed a great deal. Mm. I'm really pleased about that.
I agree. My mum asked to come on this, and I was like, maybe not on the first episode, Mum. She was like, I'll happily come on and talk about sex.
Same. And when I started Sex Magazine, my mum was like, you realise you'll never get it. You'll never work again.
And this is not, it's not true at all. Like, no? We were very much shamed back in the day. But we felt like it was a really good space to have a podcast to talk about sex, what it means to be a woman, what it means to have really nourishing, good, enjoyable sex. And yeah, that's where our discussion's going to go, right?
I feel like this is going to be like sitting next to a group of girls in a pub having a really interesting conversation,
mm-hmm.
and trying to tell the person you're with to shut up because you want to listen to that conversation. We're going to be that group of girls.
Yeah, and we have brought Prosecco, you know, just to get things flowing.
I rang Giles earlier and I was like, I think we can't do this sober. So good that we're recording on Tuesdays.
Fantastic. So without further ado, this episode, which is kindly sponsored by Lilo, a fantastic sex toy brand, is all about spicing it up.
So we're going to talk about from going the beginning of a relationship when things are already really hot all the way through to when things are a bit less exciting, which happens to everyone. And I think as a sex writer, the number one thing I've ever been asked is, how do I get that first time feeling back?
Mm.
So we're going to talk about that today. I'm not going to lie to you guys. The reality is you can't get the actual first time feeling back.
No.
But you can do loads of other stuff that makes it just as exciting in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. And full disclosure, we've both been in long-term relationships for a while.
Oh yeah, we should explain. So I am married. I got engaged at the age of 23 and married at the age of 26. I've been married for a year and a bit. And I've been with my partner since 2013. And he is 12 years older than me. And before that, I was kind of a bit of a wild child, spent a lot of time on the London BDSM scene, had a lot of weird sex with questionable people. So I've done both sides of it.
And I think I'm the yin to your yang. I'm Jewish. I have pretty vanilla sex. I've been with my boyfriend 4 years. Before that, I had a boyfriend for 2 years. I pretty much just jump from boyfriend to boyfriend. I think I'm the probably more moderate of the two, would you say?
I think so. I also just want to tell you guys that we so badly wanted to call this Nice Jewish Girls, and my lack of Judaism ruined it. My stupid Catholic faith.
That was like, can I just pretend to be Jewish for the show? I was like, don't think you can.
No, apparently that's like cultural appropriation. Literal cultural appropriation.
So, so we're both coming at this episode from the point of view of two people who have been in long-term relationships for a while, and I suppose that the issue of spicing it up is something that's relevant to our lives.
But over the course of the series, we're talking to people who are gay, hetero, bi, pan, pretty much anything you can imagine. Mm-hmm. People who have sex with people of all different genders. We're going to talk to people of different ethnicities, people of different religions,
body sizes,
different body types. So it's not just going to be the two of us who are quite similar talking about it. You're going to hear from all sorts of really fascinating people.
Fantastic. Let's get on to it. Our first guest of the season. Thank you so much for joining us. We're joined now by Ryan Ellis and Girl on the Net. Thank you guys for being here today. So we're talking today about spicing it up. What does that mean, Bex? What are we talking about?
So I think the reason this is a really good place for us to start is that there's the number one question I get asked is people come up to me at dinner parties, like at family events, literally anywhere, and go, how do you spice it up? How do you get that like first time feeling back? And it's on the front of every magazine, like, get that first time feeling back. And I'm a big believer that you can't actually get the first time feeling back, because it's never the first time with the first person. But what you can do is kind of bring exciting new stuff into your current sex life, which is totally fine. So I guess, are we gonna ask these guys about the beginnings of their sexual experiences?
Yeah, talk to us about the beginning, Girl on the Net. I feel like we need a shortened name for you, Girl.
You can call me Girl. Girl's
girl.
Fine.
All right,
I go by lots of different
Gotten.
Names. Gotten. Lots
Gotten.
Of people call me Gotten.
Tell us about your first sexual experiences.
So I think most of my first like sexual experiences in terms of feeling arousal came on my own when I'm kind of making up little stories in my head. I have a really vivid memory when I was quite young of playing with marbles and kind of setting my marbles out in this little scenario that was like on a pirate ship, and there were pirates on the pirate ship, and then a lady was caught by the pirates on the pirate ship and punished for sneaking in. And so like my really early experiences were all about just kind of me telling myself stories. But I think in terms of like the first real life experience when I was kind of with someone and felt that, you know, not just a kind of romantic kiss, but the actual like gush of, oh my God, I'm so horny right now, was probably a snog I had with a guy in the clearing in some woods when I was quite young and had sort of sent all of my other friends off to go to the shop or go and do something. So because I kind of knew I wanted to do something with this particular guy.
It's weird, isn't it? It's like so pure, those really, really early experiences, but so intense.
Yeah.
Like really, really. So the word that we didn't use is virginity.
Yeah.
That I feel really strongly about. Rowan, do you think that the concept of virginity is a good thing, a bad thing? Does it lend anything to the world? Should it be got rid of?
I mean, it's a social construct, but that still has social power. Like, I think that it's very easy to just be like, virginity is a social construct, therefore it doesn't matter. But I'm like, no, because if our society still says it matters, then we can't just expect, especially girls, women, to ignore it or to think it isn't a big deal, or to vilify them or villainize them if they do think it's a really big deal for them.
Yeah.
But from my point of view as like a queer woman, I'm like, what does losing my virginity look like, right? Like, what does that... Is it because I think virginity is so much like a penis
hymen.
Goes in a vagina and the hymen gets destroyed, and you're like, none of that makes any. I mean, the hymen thing is nonsense.
The hymen
also
is such
like
a myth.
It's but also like, what does it look like if the person, if you don't have a vagina and a penis, and then, and also I've got something called vaginismus, which means that my vagina spasms if anything comes into contact with it. And it means that, like, even if I wanted to, I could not get a dick inside me. Like, that's not a thing that could happen. So what does it look like for women who have, like, particular chronic pain or things like vaginismus where they physically can't, even if they really want to? And I think that's... That kind of complicates it even more than just saying social construct.
I remember even quite recently I was talking to a friend of mine who was with her girlfriend from 14 through 19. And I was like, yeah, because you lost your virginity really late, didn't you? You were 19. She was like, no, I had a girlfriend, and I was like, oh, I am part of the problem.
Yeah.
I assumed because there was no penis, you hadn't lost your virginity, which is so bad.
No, but it's true. I think we do think of virginity as like a male-female thing. Mm. I remember at boarding school people saying, oh, I don't want to go horse riding because I don't want to lose my virginity to a horse because the act of riding a horse. They literally thought if they rode a horse that they were no longer a virgin.
I think there's quite a lot wrapped up when we talk about virginity. We're often kind of nudging people towards this idea of a sort of sexual hierarchy that, you know, you start off, you've got your first base and second base, and then the home run is penetration. And actually, for a lot of people, penetration is not pleasurable, is not the way that they primarily experience pleasure anyway. And on top of that, because I know we're kind of going to get on to sort of spicing things up a bit later on, but there's this idea that once you've reached that peak, which is penetration, and, you know, that's what you do, that going to do something like fingering or, you know, oral sex, that is somehow a step down and you're sort of going back on yourself, even though that's really hot.
My sex life was definitely at its best in the sort of 18 months before I started having sex, because I was Catholic and I was one of those everything but girls. So I was all about like manual. And that was fantastic. I really enjoyed that. And then suddenly I had actual penetrative sex. And I was like, wait, sorry, this was the bit we weren't doing. Yeah. This is the least good bit.
And I think that maps onto like individual sexual experiences as well, the idea that when the man, like penis in vagina, man comes, like that's what you're working up to, and foreplay is just like the warm-up to this one act, and that's the important bit. Like, so it's mapped out onto virginity, but also like individual experiences as well, I think, often.
Yeah.
Oh god, it's so true. And that hierarchy is a bit, I don't, it's just not, it's not quite right, is it? Like, some of the most enjoyable bits of sexual relations is the bits in the lead up and not actually the main act. I'm with you on that.
I think for most women, they, well, at least most women I know, if they're coming during penetrative sex, it's with a toy.
Mm.
And if they're coming in sex generally, it's either before penetration or afterwards. But, I mean, what I can never remember the statistic, but it's the vast majority of women can't orgasm from penetration alone.
Mm.
And yet, that is considered to be the...
Yeah, the pinnacle.
Yeah.
On the subject of orgasm, girl, what was your first... What's your first memory of having an orgasm?
Well, so I know the first orgasm that I ever had was courtesy of the person I love the most in the whole world, which is me. My parents are divorced and I used to go and stay at my dad's house on the weekends, and I found a book in my dad's house that was absolute filth, and I'm really upset that I can't remember the name of it, because I would love to like read it again now as an adult and see if it was actually as filth as I thought it was at the time. But it was definitely very sexual. It was like deliberately erotic. And so I kind of flipped through this book a little bit and basically discovered wanking about 10 a.m. on Saturday, left my bedroom on Sunday when it was time to go back to my mum's house, and was like, holy shit, this is the most incredible thing ever. And I think like the first few times I had an orgasm, I didn't even need to take my jeans off. I was just like, right, that is done. That is, I am in love. Amazing. That was my first time.
I remember wondering if other people could do it, or being like, is this something that I have? Did I create
it? Did I invent it?
Do people know about this? Because it's free and it's fun and it's not bad for you. Like, how is that possible?
Why do people do anything like, else? Honestly, how do you get work done?
I know. Well, to be fair, as a freelancer, I still find that it can be a real distraction.
you love the freelancer wank. The 12 p.m. wank on a weekday. That's your thing.
Lilo very kindly, our gracious sponsors, sent us some toys, which we're going to talk about later in our review. And I was like, well, technically, this is for work now.
Yeah, because we're reviewing toys.
This is a good use of my afternoon.
Rowan, do you have any memories of like first kind of sexual experiences?
Yeah, so it's kind of weird. So I identify as on the asexual spectrum, but it took me a really long time to figure that out, because I had a very fulfilling, like, what people would refer to as, like, sex life with someone that was very kink and BDSM based. And it took me a real long time to work out, like, all the things you're enjoying about this are all the things that aren't the sex bits of it. So it's, like, all the sensualness, the connection, the, like... the intellect element, the like laughter, the fun of it, and not the actual sex bit of it. So it's kind of interesting, because when I think back about sexual experiences I've had, the things I'm remembering aren't the orgasm bit of it. It's like a lot of other stuff and power dynamics and things like that. So it's kind of it's an interesting one, because it was that thing where I kind of thought I was a little bit like did a lot of Googling about, like, why don't orgasms feel that great? Like, like, am I wrong? But I, like, the opposite experience. I was like, I'd heard about these things that you're meant to have. And I was like, why is it just fine?
Like, no, no, no. Did you find that there were people being like, oh, it's because you're not doing it right. Just you wait. You'll literally find the right person.
Yes, completely. Yeah. And I was, and it's not that I'm like sex repulsed or anything like that, which some asexual people are. It's just, I'm like, it's fine.
Yeah.
And then occasionally, like, as my cycle comes around, I'll be like, oh, that's the horniness, but I'm like, it's okay. So yeah, it's kind of a bit of a weird one that took a really long time to
I was
to
gonna
work
ask
out.
How long did that kind of process look like of deciding that there was a label that you were happy to use for yourself?
It took a lot longer than it did to work out I was gay. Like, it's like, I kind of, like, hadn't really thought about it. I'd been going through the motions of, like, oh, everyone else is kissing boys this disco. I suppose I should kiss a boy this disco. And then when I actually started to think about it very quickly, it was like, oh, okay, cool, I'm gay. And then I think all of this idea of lesbians are very sexualized, I think. And then they often sexualize themselves isn't the right way of putting it, but they reclaim that sexuality. So express their sexual desires very, like, loudly and clearly. And I think looking at lesbians who are on YouTube, which is kind of where I do my work, that's very obvious and really great. So I was, like, very much like, oh, this is what I need to do. This is where this space I need to be in. And then literally, like, fast forward to, like, 10 years later, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Mm. And I think it's just, like, because it wasn't a thing that was ever talked about. Mm. It was this is an inevitability. This is where it will lead you. This is something that you'll like eventually. Although there's a lot of, like, the first time, it'll hurt so much, and you'll hate it. And, like, you'll give in to your boyfriend. And
you'll learn
and,
like, to like
yeah.
it.
So, yeah, it was kind of a... It was difficult to find the label... Because it was so assumed, one, because it was so assumed that you would like it, and this is a, and I think that all those things had to be connected, that, like, sex and sensuality and things were, that was, sex was how you got those things, rather than them being things that you could find in different places, and then not having a word for it was also, like, a bit of a barrier as well.
Because the only asexual person I can remember knowing about into probably my early 20s was Stephen Fry, who is actually now married, and I think no longer identifies as asexual. That was it. That was literally it.
Yeah.
And so, and whereas, if you'd said, can you name people who are gay, I could have given you a long list. So I guess a lot of it is about representation, because always, what do you know to look at?
What do you find people's responses when you say that you're asexual? How do people kind of see that?
I think confusion a lot of the time, because it's a bit, like, what is that? What exactly is going on there? Because I think the only I feel like asexual reproduction feels like something that was in biology, like plant-based, and I'm like, not quite
that. That'd be cool, though.
Yeah, it'd be
what,
like,
a superpower.
I'm a medical miracle, everyone. here's my clone. But no, I think it's just slight confusion. But also, it's not something I necessarily talk about. I talk about being queer a lot. And the asexual thing, I'm kind of a bit like, this feels strange to talk about, because I think that there's such a... Like, talking about sex is such a big deal. Mm. And so talking about not having it then invites a lot more questions than you would have if you were just like, oh, yeah, I'm gay. At this point, I think people are like, oh, cool. But they... Sometimes you get questions about... So what, like, especially from boys, about, like, so what do you do with other girls? How does that work? And I'm like, buddy, if you can't work out what two people that without penises could do with each other, then, like, I feel real bad for your girlfriend. Like, but, yeah, it's something that I'm, like, working on talking about more, because I am quite well known for doing, like, the gay stuff and talking about that quite openly. And I really love how much that can be... I've seen that be useful for people to talk about that openly. And I'm, like, getting to the stage where I'm like, oh, yes, the asexual thing is also something I could talk about that would potentially be useful.
Because I think I know a couple of people who are asexual, and they are both in monogamous relationships, and very tricky situations, because they don't want to have sex, but they also don't want their partners to have sex with other people, and they want to stay with the people they're with. And so I guess that kind of segues into spicing it up. Like, is there anything you could do to spice it up if you don't want to have sex, but you do love the person you're with and you know they need sex? Is there a right answer there, or is there not really a...
Man, that's so tough. And I think it's like, it's such an individual thing. It kind of has to be, because it isn't a blueprint. And that's what's so great about, like, a lot of queer relationships, is that there isn't a blueprint, so you sort of start from the ground up and you can build the expectations in. Whereas if it's like, you know, polyamory isn't an option, or open relationships aren't an option, but also you're not interested in having sex and not willing to have sex, and yeah, that's such a difficult... It's kind of like, what is, like, it's going to be a compromise in any situation. Like, I don't know what, if you, like, had partners who were like, hey, this is a thing that I don't do, like, would that automatically be for you guys, like, okay, cool, this isn't compatible, like, this isn't going to work?
I know with friends who have chronic pain problems, and you mentioned earlier about chronic pain, and I know friends that have chronic pain in the pelvic area, and how, and what a difficult kind of effect that has on personal relationships, and how you talk about that. And I know with a lot of guys, it's been a very difficult thing to understand. Like, if you take sex out of the equation, what are you left with? What does that look like? Yeah. That's such a new world. And I can imagine it's quite overwhelming.
I think I would expect, if my husband didn't want to have sex anymore, I think either he would have to be okay with us exploring being open, rather than, I think poly is much more complicated, but open... Mm-hmm. Or monogamish, as people are calling it.
Yeah.
That kind of, like, the French way. I'd have a mistress in an apartment in a arrondissement. Or I would expect him to be kind of, I guess, to treat sex with me the way that I treat watching rugby with him, in that I will do it, and I'll try my best. I won't go out of my way, and I won't ruin my weekend, but I'll do it because it makes him happy. So I guess I would expect him to maybe help me orgasm without having penetrative sex.
Mm.
And I wouldn't expect it to go down on me, I don't think, because that would seem a bit mean. But I would still want, like, the physical contact of maybe, like, cuddling and maybe, like, masturbating with him.
Yeah.
That would, I think, be the compromise I would look for.
Yeah, you'd still want that intimacy.
But if you're sex repulsed, which is a thing that you can be, that, I guess, I don't want him, like, yakking or, like, or just feeling deeply uncomfortable. That would be really sad.
Not an ideal outcome, as you're masturbating. What are you throwing up?
Is there anything that you would suggest?
Well, I think it's really difficult, because a lot of it relies on this idea that, you know, sex is this one particular thing, and when you say the word sex, all of us will have different ideas in our heads of, like, the kind of thing that we want to do or might not want to do. And I get asked a lot by, like, readers of my blog. Usually it's like one partner, often it's a bloke. It's usually, like, I think probably most of my readers, at least the ones who get in touch with me, are straight guys.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, well, my wife doesn't really like sex, or she doesn't want to do this, that and the other. How do I get her to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, and it's really difficult, because, like, well, firstly, I think he will have a certain idea in his head of what he wants sex to be. She may have a very different idea of what she wants sex to be. And I think the other problem is that usually when people get in touch and ask about it, they want an answer to the question that is like a quick fix, like, mm-hmm. do this and then everything will be great. Whereas actually, I think the answer is a much, much longer term thing. Like, I would always say the first step is you need to start normalizing sex chat within your relationship. Often these are people who haven't had conversations with their partners before, or they have had kind of tentative conversations, mm-hmm. or they've said, I really want to do that, this that you see in porn, but never actually opened up the discussion.
Yeah.
So I think, like, normalizing sex chat, talking to your partner more about, well, what do you like? You know, not, it doesn't just have to be what position, you know, what's your favorite position, but, like, what makes you feel intimate? What do you feel, you know, how do you feel connected to me? And when you start normalizing that, you can have loads of fun. Like, I spend quite a lot of time asking my partner, like, super detailed questions about his junk, because I'm fascinated. I'm like, is it better if you come loads with, like, really great force or with great quantity?
What,
like, what's better? He says it depends on the mood, and that's really annoying.
That's,
answer.
That's very niche.
He gives me a really annoying answer to the question sometimes. What was one of my other ones? I've had quite a few. Like, oh yeah, one of them was, do the waves of your orgasm time with the spurts of jizz that come out of the end
do
of the dick?
Do they?
No, apparently not. Well, he says not all. Sometimes they do, but not always.
That is the first thing I'm doing when I get home. Well, a fascinating question.
But so, like, all of that stuff, it doesn't always have to be, like, I want to have sex now and here's what I want to do and you need to provide me with what I need. It's about sort of just being really curious about each other and interested in each other and kind of fascinated by what do you love and how can I kind of make that happen.
I think fiction can be enormously helpful in that sense, like watching, either being like, I saw this thing in this film, it was so hot, I want to watch it with you, or I read this story and this was so hot, I really want you to read it. And I find that really helpful.
That, I love that. Like, sending me porn, or sometimes he'll take a screen grab and be like, oh my god, this.
Yeah.
Or like, I'll send him a thing. But I think crucially, there's got to be the element of, like, editing. Like, we'll often go back and forward with fantasies and I'll be like, okay, so I was thinking the other day about maybe you tying me down and fucking someone else in front of me and then kind of teasing me with it. He's like, okay, that would work, but I'd be a bit nervous about like whether or not you'd get jealous. So maybe I'd need to not gag you and then you could talk back. And we could do. So you kind of just sort of nudge each other.
We have a very, very strong line in our marriage about things that we're going to talk about that we're going to do or that we're not going to do. So during foreplay, we'll be talking about, we're definitely going to have a threesome and we're definitely like, you're going to watch while I fuck her and I'm going to tell her you can't join in and it's going to be really hot. We will never do that because I would kill both of them in a fit of cold rage.
Yeah.
So there is, I think it's also allowing yourself to have those conversations about really sexy hot things without necessarily thinking you have to then do it.
Yes, 100%. And it's also, particularly if you're with someone who's kind of nervous about sharing their fantasies or like shy about kind of living your fantasies out, if you give them the space to play and talk about it and imagine without putting so much pressure on them that, well, you said this, so now we have to do it. And I'm on Craigslist right now trying
to find something. Having a
threesome. Yeah, like you kind of give them that space to be playful and be a bit playful yourself and don't immediately assume that because they haven't, like, within 5 minutes of you talking about a thing, they haven't immediately, like, wrapped you in cling film and beaten the shit out of you. Like, you can kind of enjoy all of the stuff that isn't the actual.
How do you think we get over that nervousness? Because I think that's a big part of what holds women back, actually communicating what they want and having a confidence to say, like, this would really turn me on. I also just think as a side note that it's a slightly unfeministy thing that we don't put our pleasure first. And part of the reason that this conversation often doesn't happen is that, like, oh, she didn't come, but, like, it's okay, like, she didn't come, like, he came, you know.
Yeah.
Often,
you know,
know. And often they don't know, or a lot of women fake it. And we're recording today on National Orgasm Day, so it's important that we mention it. Yeah. A lot of women fake it, and it's because women's pleasure is not put at the forefront and it isn't the biggest consideration. So women don't feel that confidence to say, this is what I really like.
Do you know what? Yeah, that's a very good point. And I actually have a bit of a rant on this. So yes, there is a problem with women often not putting our pleasure first, like straight women particularly. And I have definitely done this a lot. I have faked orgasms quite a lot. If people tell me not to fake orgasms because I'm ruining my sex life, they can fuck off, because I do it sometimes. It's just fun. Sometimes I fake an orgasm because it makes him come quicker. And then when he comes, I'm more likely to come because I really like watching him come. But I think, although some of the blame, we need to take responsibility for our own pleasure, and some of the blame can be laid at our doors. What really fucks me off is the fact that when women do express sexual pleasure, straight women particularly, but I'm sure it's actually true of all women to a certain extent, we are not believed. Like, straight men do not believe us. I will argue with straight men about the fact that I fucking love porn. I love swearing.
I'm pretty sure this is going explicit on iTunes. I think there's no doubt about that. I think
swearing's allowed.
Draw the line on swearing.
In that case, brilliant. I fucking love porn. I love sex. I love getting turned on and getting aroused. And one of the things I am confronted with most is men who say to me, where are all the pervy women like you? Where can I find a girlfriend like you? Oh, and I'm like, gosh. You, mate, you're fucking... Or can you're going to these women and questioning their sexuality. I don't believe you. There's no way any other woman could possibly enjoy looking at an erect penis. Mm. I love looking at erect penises. Like, fucking line them up.
I used to meet men, particularly men, so in their late 40s to mid 50s at fetish clubs. And I'd be chatting to them, and then they would admit, they'd have a wedding ring on, and I'd be like, where's your wife? And they'd be like, oh, no, I'd never bring her here. And I'd be like, oh, why is that? And he's like, oh, no, she wouldn't like anything like this. And then we would have a chat, and I'd be like, that's really sad. You know, this is clearly a big fetish for you. You're living your life without it, even though it's a huge part of who you are. Why is that? And he'd be like, oh, no, I could never speak to her about it. She's not that kind of woman.
Maybe she's at home wanking right now, wishing you would fuck her.
So an affair.
But instead of horrifying her by saying, darling, is there any chance you might be into a bit of spanking? You're just going to cheat on her in sex clubs. Which of those two do you think she'd be more offended by?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you think in same-sex relationships, do you think that problem of communication is there and saying, this is what I want and this is what feels good to me?
So I think in any relationship, like, there's always going to be communication issues, because I think you have particular ideas about what is polite and impolite and things like that, and I think that doesn't stop with those relationships. But I do think that the expectation isn't necessarily there from the beginning, so there's no expectation of what will be happening. Mm. And I think especially in queer relationships that involve, like, trans people or gender non-conforming people, or, you know, you can't just assume, like, oh, someone has this genitalia, therefore this is what they're interested in, which is something that I don't think, like, it would be great if no one assumed that of anyone, because I feel like that would actually be really, like, it forces people to communicate in a lot of ways. Mm. But, like, yeah, so it's having to have those conversations, I think, makes the communication better. But I think there are still queer couples who still don't know how to do that, because that's not a thing that ever gets talked about. It's very much like, if you do sex ed, it's very like down the line, here are the parts and here's what they do.
But there isn't, diseases like, you can catch.
Yeah, and then occasionally it'll be like, if you have a boyfriend and he says he will only love you if you have sex, then you can say no, and then that's it. And there's no like, okay, but what happens after that? Or what happens to be lead up to that? Or what if it's like you kind of want to, but then maybe only like this? And those conversations aren't happening. And I think when we talk about consent, it needs to be within a conversation around communication rather than just a very black and white, no means no, and like say yes or whatever. And I think that's, communication is difficult for anyone, but I have found that the way that I've communicated with my partners has been much more communicative than my straight friends has been. Like they are constantly having issues that seem to be around communication because of these ideas of, oh, I'm not meant to talk like this to this person. And I think especially the idea of that they'll emasculate the men that they're with if they suggest that they aren't bringing them enough pleasure. And it kind of feels like it might be a criticism if they are like, oh, so like if you go down on me, like try this, that feels like he'll maybe think that they're saying that he's not good enough or that he's not good at sex. And I think that viewing it as an exploration together rather than a criticism one way or the other way makes a lot more sense.
It really fucks me off that you have to kind of pander in that way, that you've got to say things in a kind of gentle way, like, I'm not offending you, but this would feel better. I don't think it'd be the way in the reverse.
Somebody said to me the other day, they were like, oh, is it, is it difficult using sex toys in sex? Does your husband find it intimidating? I was like, no, and I wouldn't have married him if he did. But I get asked by women sometimes, like, can I bring a vibrator into our bedroom? Is that going to be, is it going to scare him? Is it going to intimidate him? It's very distressing.
I know.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you mentioned consent, because I think a lot of this is really, like, tied in with consent, and we're not, it's tied in effectively, consent and pleasure kind of go hand in hand. And we're starting to talk more about consent and whether or not, you know, you have to make sure the person you're doing this with actually wants to be there. But I think there's a kind of a pleasure aspect of it as well, in that a lot of the time, like for a very long time, women have effectively been taught that the outcome of sex is a man will spaff, it might hurt you. And maybe if you're lucky, really lucky, you might come. Now, that's shit, isn't it? It's just shit. Like, we have been taught, like, for so long, we've kind of been taught to just sort of put up with it. And it's a bonus if you get to come. And I think as we're starting to have loads more conversations around consent and communication, and pleasure really has to be at the heart of that. Like, and in doing that, it's going to be really awkward for a lot of women who potentially have spent a lot of their lives, and hopefully awkward for a lot of men who have spent a lot of their lives not understanding what actually pleasure looks like for their partner. And there are going to be some really awkward conversations where you have to go, for 10 years I have not come, and we're going to do something about it.
And but I think that's so much harder. Like, it's one thing 3 months in where you go, actually, one time in four I'm faking it. You're married for 10 years. How, like, that's terrifying.
And the whole thing, you're kind of not, not feeling gratified by it. But I feel like a lot of these conversations need to start in a smaller space. So I'm thinking kind of specifically with, like, your girlfriends, is like, even in those contexts, I feel like sometimes the conversations aren't particularly comfortable, where you're talking about vibrators or masturbation or intimacy with your partner. Even with your friends, you don't really want to talk about it. And I think if you can create more arenas where you can talk about things, you'll build up your confidence if you can't get to the big hurdle of perhaps addressing a partner with it.
Oh yeah. And it's always, I think, we often conceive of it like you have to sit your partner down and have this really conversation where you tell them all this terrible stuff about your sex life. But actually, like, for me, one of my, like, this is a really boring, simple sex tip of the type you'd find in Cosmo. But one of my favourite sex tips is, after you've had sex with someone, presumably you like them and you enjoy having some sort of intimacy with them, even if that wasn't particularly good, give them a compliment. After every time you've had sex, give them one compliment. I love that noise you made at this point. I think your dick's amazing. Or you are really beautiful in this light. Like, you look amazing. I really enjoyed that. I had a great time. And if you can start kind of feeding in compliments about the things that you like, again, you're normalizing discussion about sex. You're hopefully opening up for a slightly bigger conversation a bit further down the line. You know, you don't have to just hit them with everything straight away and go, I've never come in 25 years of marriage. Fuck you.
I hate you.
Do you think you could maybe at some point, if you were gearing up for this, try that? So you say, that was incredible. I love the way you pulled my hair. I actually find it a bit uncomfortable when you pinch my nipples. Like, is that, can you tie the two, like, the feedback and the criticism together?
Oh, for sure. So the other day, I got told off because apparently this was quite abrupt feedback, but we did a really lovely position where his dick got really deep in me. He's got a very satisfying cock. And afterwards, we just sort of finished and I was like, oh my God, that was so amazing. You were so deep inside me. And he was like, any other notes? And I was like, yeah, not really a fan of the bit where you spat in my face.
Noted.
But it's one of those things, like that, he did that because in a previous time I'd gone, oh, I love the bit where you spat in my face. He just got the tone slightly wrong in this one. It was fine. But like, as soon as you start normalizing that stuff, that, if I just said it to him without any kind of compliment, and if we didn't talk about sex all the time, that would have been quite shocking.
And but you'd never have done it again as well. And there might come a time where you do want that. I have shot myself in the foot with sex with my husband a lot of times where I've been in a bad mood that day. Like, I sometimes really like being slapped in the face. And then one time he did it when I wasn't in the mood, and I was like, how fucking dare you, you're a wife beater. And now he will never do it again unless I really ask for it. And I think possibly then I should have a conversation with him where I'm like, listen, that time not ideal, but all the 50 times before, absolutely fine. Really sorry I shouted. Please do it again.
But I think that's a good reaction. Kudos on him for that reaction, because I think, like, just going, okay, do you know what? If it's going to have this bad reaction, I'm just going to stop doing it. And that's absolutely the right way to do things, is to just, you know, always minimise any potential for harm. But the more you kind of talk about it, the more you can build in things that maybe people wouldn't expect in their kind of standard sexual script.
Can I ask, how does your partner feel about the sex blogging? Because you must have so many emails and comments and not particularly nice stuff from strangers the whole time. Does he feel...
He is very supportive and very kind about it. It's really tricky, because when I started, I was mostly just talking about people I was shagging casually. And so even now, if people found out what my real name was, probably you wouldn't be able to identify them. But he's very identifiable. Mm. And my second book is almost entirely about him. He's very supportive. He sort of rolls his eyes sometimes mm-hmm. when I tell him about all of the fights that I'm having on the internet. But I think mostly, like, he likes it a little. Like, there are women who have a massive crush on him because I write him through the eyes of someone who is wildly in love with him and who is obsessed with his dick and thinks he's amazing in bed. And so it's kind of interesting. Like, sometimes I'll meet up with other sex bloggers and they're like, oh, I'd so love to meet your other half. I think he likes that.
You've been together for quite a long time, haven't you?
God, hey, do you know, we worked out the other day, we've been together for about as long as Julian Assange has been hiding in a cupboard.
And what a way to measure it. How long actually is that?
About 6 years, wow. Can you believe it?
Wow. Rowan, what advice do you give if things are feeling a little stale?
I feel like my area of expertise in this as the lesbian is lesbian bed death.
Okay.
Which is, if people don't know about it, it's this thing that people talk about where it's like, if lesbians have been in a relationship for a really long time, they just stop having sex. Turns out, this is nonsense. It was based on some really iffy studies which very much prioritised the idea of, like, what sex was, in inverted commas, to be very heteronormative. And it also was much more concerned with how many times you had sex rather than how long the sex lasted, whether you were gratified by the sex, all of this kind of stuff. But it's been super internalised, so a lot of lesbians will talk about it as if it's a thing, and I think probably it's just they're having the same kind of fulfilment in sex that a lot of their straight peers are having. It's just... they're being told, oh, this is abnormally low because you're a lesbian and that's how this works. And I think it also links really into the idea of women, like, having a lower libido than men do. And so if you get two women together, of course, women aren't sexual. Women don't enjoy this that much. Why would they particularly want to have sex? They're just lovely companions, like maiden aunts who live together, hold each other gently.
Female sexuality is very gentle and soft, exactly. Not really real. Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm like, as someone who has, like, a female sensuality that isn't that, like, involves kink and involves BDSM and, like, all this kind of stuff, and it's kind of complicated. And I'm like, this is nonsense. This is such nonsense. But it's this thing that's been told so many times that, like, even in the lesbian community, everyone's like, oh, I suppose that makes sense. And so I think it's really interesting when you talk about stuff being stale. It's like, well, what is that? Like, is that about you are having less sex than you think you should be having more? Is it because you're not having as much as you wanted? Is it because there was a spark before, and what does it look like now? And, like, I think that that's really interesting to work out, like, what exactly does, like, staleness or not having enough sex or whatever it is look like.
I think quantity, I think quantity is a massive thing. And one of the things that I've often got obsessed about is I'll say to my husband, we don't have as much sex as we used to. We used to have sex 7 times a week and now it's like 3 or 4. And he's like, yes, okay. But now we probably have sex once on Saturday morning and once on Saturday afternoon. And often on Saturday afternoon, we'll have sex for like an hour and a half. We didn't used to do that. We used to do it like a lot, but less. And probably we spend as much time in bed as we used to. But also, even if we are having a bit less sex than we were before, I'm coming more, we're probably having better sex, we're talking about it more. Like, it's okay for things to shift. Mm-hmm. You don't have to spice things up because your sex life doesn't look exactly like it did right at the beginning. It's okay for it to change.
Yeah.
That's not a failure.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of kind of keeping up with the Joneses. Like, people, you see people talking about different kinks and things, and you go, oh, we must go and have these adventures. And it's a bit like seeing those 30 things to do before you die lists and just having to go and tick off every single one. Well, in reality, real people, you kind of make your own adventures and you say, well, here's the 3 adventures I actually want to go on, and I'll ignore the rest and focus on the things that we really like.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, guys, for being the most wonderful first guest of the season and for being so honest and open with us about all your advice and
set the bar very high.
Set the bar very high. If people would like to find out more about you, where should they head on the internet?
So I blog at girlonthenet.com and you can find me on Twitter at girlonthenet.
I make YouTube videos. If you type in Rowan Ellis into YouTube, it'll be me and a guy who I think does bodybuilding and it'll be very obvious which
one. Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
The Climax is brought to you in association with intimate brand Lilo. Swedish-born Lilo is one of the world's leading brands for designer-led intimate products. From high-quality pleasure objects to bedroom accessories, candles and condoms, they've got something for everyone. Lilo is a little like us, driven by an insatiable curiosity, a desire to explore and refine the boundaries between sex and the 21st century.
Lilo is all about the quality. A heritage brand based on craft, unexpected innovation, and being entirely different from everything and anyone else. For more information and to explore your own sexual desire, visit www.lilo.com. And we're offering an exclusive discount for the Climax listeners. Use the code LILOFORYOU to receive 20% off products. Thank you to our sponsors, Lilo. This part of the show is our product review slot, where every week we are looking at different products and Rebecca and I are talking about the products and how we got on with them. This section is kindly sponsored by Lilo, who have kindly sent us some products to try. This week I tried the Soraya, which is the world's most beautiful dual action vibrator. It's basically a rabbit, so there's kind of like a long stem that goes inside of you, and there's a front bit which goes on your clit, essentially. It has 8 different speeds. I absolutely loved it. What I'd say.
Were you like in the mood when you tried it?
So I want to do like full context of my relationship with sex toys. I would say that I've always enjoyed them personally. So I've enjoyed them for like personal pleasure. Like when I was younger, I was like tried out with vibrators. I didn't go much into the dildo world. I was a bit intimidated by them. They're sort of girthy and they can be quite, intimidating. So I kind of only really experimented with vibrators. I only more recently tried out things like rabbits and stuff like that. But in terms of sex toys with my partner, I've always been a little bit skeptical of them, and I've often felt like they weren't as good as just the real thing and just us. So it'll be interesting throughout the course of the season of looking at some and seeing if they can really enhance our sex life. So I loved this toy. It was the only sex toy that I've ever used that gave me a G-spot orgasm and a clit one, which I think is pretty, I mean, it's a pretty big validation for the product. I was like super skeptical. They say it's dual action and it's designed to massage both your clit and your G-spot. But I was like, oh, probably won't, you know, maybe it'll just clit. And it did. And I was like, wow. And it's amazing. Like, really, really powerful. It's also silent, which I think is great.
That is great.
It is great.
I mean, I know that you have recently moved out of home.
Yeah.
But if you're living at home or living in a house share, as most of us are, it's very, very difficult. Like, and actually, to be honest, even living with my partner, I prefer, if I'm having a wank, I'd rather he was kind of, I don't mind if he knows, but I don't want him being reminded by a constant, like,
zzz. Yeah, exactly. And I think there's so many things that can intimidate us and put us off that sexual exploration with yourself. And something as little as, like, a buzzer can be that thing.
Yeah.
So what I really liked about this product was that it was silent and that you could, yeah, you could just enjoy it in peace. I'd really recommend it. I think especially for women that perhaps struggle to orgasm during sex or haven't had a G-spot orgasm, I just think it's so empowering to, like, know that you could do those kind of things on your own and to know what you like.
With G-spot orgasms, it's a sort of muscle memory thing. The more you do it, the more able you are to do it. Mm. So by having a G-spot orgasm with a toy and by teaching your body how to do that, you're more likely to be able to do it during penetrative sex, which is great.
Definitely. I think it's a bit of a myth, isn't it, that if you use toys too much, then you somehow won't be able to have them during sex.
It is a myth. The only thing is, directly after very intense stimulation, you might find that your vagina fit or your vulva seems a little bit numb, but that's only directly afterwards. And also, you do sort of get into, it's possible to get into sort of routine with how you do things. So it is possible that you could masturbate the same way over and over and over again and then struggle to come in a different way.
Mm.
So if you're worried about it, then the only thing you need to do is just change it up. So for instance, you could use the toy that you were using.
Soraya.
The Soraya. And you can have a great time with that for about a week, but then after that you might want to think about using your hands or going back to oral sex with your partner, just so that you don't get into a rut. And that's also very exciting. It's nice to be able to change it up.
Yeah, definitely. But I would really recommend this toy for anyone, really, if you're looking just to explore on your own or you're trying to figure out what you want to say to your partner. I mean, I think it was fantastic. And it's also very pretty, and I think that's such an important part. Like, these, we're feminine creatures and these are aesthetic items, and the design of it's really beautiful. It's not something that you kind of want to shove in a drawer. It's really beautiful.
I think I would also, because I've also used one before, having been a bit of a sex toy demon, I think they are a really good place to start with rabbits because they're not huge. And a lot of women are, most women are only about 5.5 centimetres deep in terms of the vagina. So you don't need something whacking, great, huge hunk of plastic going inside you. It's a nice, easy entry point.
Mm. Great. So if you'd like to buy that, it's £189 from Lilo.com. Betsy.
But you can use a code.
Oh, yeah, you can use a code. Indeed, we have a code for you. Our code is Lilo for you, which will get you 20% off.
So
product.
Yeah, so put that in and then it's cheaper, which is great. Who doesn't love a discount code?
Betsy, what have you been trying this week?
So this week I tried the anniversary line. So Lilo sent this to me at work. I got in and there was this pretty much treasure chest on my desk. Like, it took up my whole desk. I opened it and it is basically a suitcase full of sex toys. It's like Dirty Christmas.
What's in there?
It has got a massive variety of stuff, but it's basically everything you would need to have quite kinky sex. So it's got, for instance, a feather teaser. It's called the Cannes Feather Teaser, as in Cannes Film Festival, not Cannes Wee. And it's just like a very light little feather duster, basically, that you could use to stimulate somebody for foreplay. It's got handcuffs, which are called the Elena Shackles. They're really nice handcuffs. They are very reliable. They are very sturdy. I mean, I probably wouldn't suspend somebody with them because it's very bad for your wrists, but you could if you tied somebody to your bedpost with them, they would not be able to get out, which is great. But they've also got a release catch as well as a key. So they're very safe, they're just a very good middle ground. There's also like a riding crop, which is telescopic. So you pull it out, it gets longer.
Wow.
Which I'm not going to lie, I found hilarious. Like, it is sexy, but it's also quite funny because you can kind of throw it and it goes long. It's like a magic wand. It's really really pleasing. That's called the Hertz telescopic crop. And that actually is a really good piece of BDSM kit, particularly if you don't have a lot of space, if you live in a house share, if you're in a position where you don't, or actually if you have kids, to be honest. But it's because it goes down very small, because sort of hitty things for BDSM stuff can be very hard to store because they can be quite big and very obvious what they are, whereas this, it goes down very little. It goes to sort of maybe 3 inches, It's very sweet. And then there's all sorts of toys. So, I mean, basically what isn't in there? But they have a very... Actually, one of the things I like best about it is they have a very classic vibrator. It's like a... Absolutely. It's the kind of thing that I've never owned before. It's sort of maybe 6.5, 7 inches, obviously phallically shaped with just multiple settings. It's so simple. So it's called the Volone Massager. And yeah, it's the kind of very classic toy that I've never had because I've always bought the kind of new, quirky, unusual stuff. But it's such a fantastic addition to your sex life because you can use it on your clit during sex, or you can use it internally when you're masturbating, or you could use it, you could even use it internally while having anal sex with somebody if you wanted to go really crazy. But it's one of those really multi-purpose all-rounders. It's the penetration equivalent of having a really simple bullet. And I love that because it kind of, if you were going to buy one thing, I would say that's a really good place to start. I mean, the point of this anniversary collection is that you would never need to buy another sex toy again.
Yeah.
Also, the other great thing about them is they all come with one charger, so you don't need loads and loads and loads, because I have a drawer of cables. Like,
does that's so good, so they can all be charged from the same,
all be charged from the exact same charger, apart from all of them can. Obviously some of them don't need to. They've got these really great internal sort of people call them different things. I call them Benoit balls. Sometimes they're called jiggle balls. Basically they are sort of balls joined together in a sort of, it looks like a figure of eight. And you wear them internally and they jiggle inside you. So they stimulate your G-spot while you're walking to work or doing some photocopying or cooking dinner or whatever it is that you're doing. And they kind of, so they're really, really arousing. And they're, honestly, they're incredibly pleasurable. These are some of the best ones I've tried. Some of the ones I've previously tried have been too heavy, so they kind of tried to fall out of your vagina. Not ideal.
Also, if you're at work going to the photocopier.
Yeah, just on the floor. Not great. Also, I've tried ones that have been like a bit small, so they don't really give you, like, if it's not wider than a tampon, you're not going to feel anything. These are genuinely brilliant. They're such a great thing, seeing as we're talking about spicing up your sex life, to wear if you're like going out to dinner with your partner. It's that kind of sexy little secret that if they were annoying you or you didn't like them, you could just pop to the loo and take them out. But I don't think you'll want to. I think you're probably much more likely to.
And they're kind of more turned on by the time you have sex.
Exactly. You're so much more turned on by the time you have sex. And also it makes kind of something as simple as going to dinner into foreplay, which is really important when you've been in a relationship for a long time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the anniversary collection, and I won't lie, it is not cheap. It is
£1,300.
But for that, you get, I'm going to read you the full list because you need to understand how much stuff is in here. You get the Can Feather Teaser, the Hertz Telescopic Crop, the Eleanor Shackles, the Key Eye Mask, the Volone Massager, the Jagerstein Flogger, the Sense Dual Massager. That's amazing. It's enormous, but it's amazing. The Rio Spanker, which is a paddle. The Fonzo Graduating Beads. Those are kind of like anal beads, which I'm sure we'll explain about at some point in this series. The Axe Multi Massager. The Stuepan plug, which is a butt plug, everyone needs a butt plug, and the Dot Benoit balls. So yes, it is expensive.
Get a lot.
It is expensive, but you get a lot for your money. And also, if you use our code, which is Lilo for you, you get 20% off. So that actually would save you like £200.
Fab. That's on Lilo.com.
Yes, check it out. Right. So this is the Ask Me Anything section. And this week, we have got two real boys.
Actual boys.
Actual boys.
I think we should call them men.
Men, okay, well, yeah. So, we've got Theo and Max and Theo.
Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
So, this section of the show, essentially, is where we get to ask men, people, probably our mothers at some stage in the series, questions, and Ask Me Anything section, questions that you've always wanted to ask someone or a partner, but you haven't had the confidence to. This is what we're doing now.
So yeah, how bothered are men about how much effort you make beforehand, like lingerie and candles or any other kind of sexy mood music? Are you bothered or not really?
It totally depends. Like, sometimes a bit of like lighting and sort of, depends what you kind of, what the vibe is, what you're going for. Is it like sensual or is it quite... is a bit different, in which case if it's like sensual and romantic then, you know, a bit of lighting.
I've always found the lingerie candles. One quite a funny one, because like, I do appreciate it in the moment, but I also, as soon as it's there, I'm just like, right, get it off. Like, seen it, 1 second done, go, get it off, let's get down to it.
If I told you that lingerie usually costs like a bra is about 70 to 90 quid...
That's nuts.
Would you still yeah. Is that worth 70 to 90 quid, or would you rather have like something else?
I don't mean like, obviously, but like with men, it's like boxers...
I was going to say, just steal one of my shirts.
Do boxers matter?
Not really. Like, I think with... No, I think you're... the kind of clothing sort of stuff doesn't really particularly turn me on.
Okay.
In particular, I don't really care. Some people are really into it.
Love a candle, though.
Yeah, a candle.
Just grab my shirt, whack a candle on, done. That's a lot cheaper.
That does actually sound quite nice. Sounds, but yeah, perfectly great to me. Okay, guys, big question. Pubes. Yay or nay?
Just nicely maintained.
Trimmed?
Trimmed, yeah.
But still present?
Neither here nor there, personally.
So if somebody's totally all gone, that's fine?
That's fine. It's your preference. But I just, as long as it's not... I just don't particularly like... some. I mean, I'm quite hairy, but it's all well-maintained.
I was about to say I wasn't too fussed, but I did once come face-to-face with a proper thicket, and it was a bit too much. So, maintained would be
Maintained.
Yeah.
Do you think that's changed? Because I think when we started having... Well, not we started having sex, as in when I started having
together.
Sex. We started together. We weren't friends then. It was very much you have to have everything off.
Mm.
Boys and girls. And I think now people... I've been out of the game for a while because I'm married. Do people still get rid of everything?
Well, there's definitely a pressure on, particularly gay men, I think, with... the way your body looks and the way that it depends what you're kind of into in terms of type or a category of gay men, if you're sort of more interested in someone that's totally hairless or someone that's hairy, there's a pressure there, I think. I think it's definitely changing. I think people are more accepting of an actual body, both for men and women, I think. Whereas if you look at 70s porn stars, for instance, obviously you're going to have, that was, and say like you just said, the last 15 or so years, I think that was totally... out of vogue, whereas now it's, I think people are much more kind of...
I was recently confronted with this issue because I had laser hair removal and had to make a decision of basically what I wanted my pubes to look like for life. And
that is a huge commitment.
Yeah, and it was about a year ago. I'd highly recommend Strip. I went in Islington. It's a great salon. it was great. It was seriously painful, but they were very efficient and it was great. But I had to think, what do I, when I'm a mum or when I'm older, what do I want it to look like?
Is it literally for life?
Yeah, it's for life. It doesn't grow back.
So you had to decide what a mum vagina should look
like. Basically, yeah. I was what do I want my mum vagina to look like? And I decided that all off would make me feel too young when I was older. And it didn't feel right. So I sort of, yeah.
I think that,
Maybe I've been doing it wrong. Or maybe I need to go to Strip. But from a purely practical point of view, if my girlfriend really wanted me to do it, I would do it, but it's so itchy.
Have you?
I disagree with that. I don't get it.
Maybe I've done it wrong.
Maybe. Have you guys ever had a back sack and crack?
No, not a wax. My mum waxed my back once, and it was an axe.
I'm so glad you said back.
My mum has a whole waxing kit, and it was, I don't know if
you
can swear, but it was a
fucking
nightmare, because she's A, shit at it, and B, it was just she just didn't have any concept of what it looked like. Because my mum, because she waxes herself, she's so used to it, so she just is she sits in the bathroom floor and waxes her legs with the door open, which is grim, and it's just please don't... Oh, fuck it.
You can beat that out.
Don't worry.
Please don't do that. And then she asked... Because I've got a really hairy back, and I said, I really hate it, and it really does a box in. It's one thing about puberty and being a man I really dislike, that and nostril hair. And she offered to do my back for me, and it was horrid, because she'd always do the things where she'd because it was quite hairy, she'd try to trim it first, then gave up, because she doesn't have much patience. And then she'd, grab the strip and it would slip halfway through, and you'd be oh. And then she'd be sorry. And then rip the rest of it off.
Heavy Scottish accent.
Excruciatingly. My mum, she's so it's...
I would have paid so much money to watch this. This is amazing.
So would I, actually. It sounds hilarious.
And the thing is, she did it on the landing, the top floor. Because I'm quite tall, I didn't fit in the bathroom, so she was just near me, basically naked with some swim shorts on, having my back. That's fucking horrible.
I've sadly never actually... Well, sadly, I've never been able to grow enough hair for it to be a problem. So, back's not an issue.
Other topic, oral sex. Thinking kind of with girls, how do you feel about going down with girls?
I fucking love it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, okay. I really enjoy it. I think we both feel the same about this one. I don't know if all guys are like, oh, yeah, it's all got to be about me. I actually get the most turned on seeing who I'm with having a great time. So, if I'm going down and I can see the effect it's having, that really gets me turned on.
Do you feel sometimes, because I know my partner is very similar, and it's me being no, I need to have showered in the last 45 minutes and I have to be completely relaxed and we have to be alone in the entire building that our flat's in before I can let that happen. I think sometimes girls can actually be the ones who...
I'm with you. I kind of sometimes I'm worried that they're not enjoying it and that turns me off.
Yeah.
And how much are you actually thinking about the thing that you're doing?
I would want to make sure that I had showered. I don't really care about my girlfriend.
That's really interesting. Yeah, because I remember saying that to my husband, being like, how long do you reckon is rude to have not showered before you receive oral sex? And he was like, I wouldn't really care.
Yeah, some people are really rude about it. Like, I don't give a... giving oral sex really turns me on.
Also does not taste anything like it smells. As in, like, it tastes like nothing, even if it smells.
That's really interesting.
After a long day.
It's not something I've ever thought about.
This is why we do this segment, because that's the kind of thing you would not know. Actually, I have been down on women. And you are right. I've just never thought about it.
My girlfriend who's gay, said that it tastes a bit salty.
I think it depends on the woman.
My memory, it tastes like pennies. That's what I was about. Genuinely?
It tastes like pennies.
Yeah, pennies, like, slightly irony.
I think it definitely depends on the person.
Maybe I've got lucky. The only woman
I sat with is, like, what, four women? I think that's all I remember.
Yeah,
the penny memory.
I feel like four's a good number, though, because you've properly given it the old
crush.
You gave it every opportunity to be fun, and with all the information you went, nah, not for me.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I did the same thing with sleeping with women. I was like, I'm sure I must be bisexual. It just would suit me so well. Tried it out, really tried. Just not for me.
Something I found really, really interesting. Maybe this was a hint. I'm hoping it wasn't, but my girlfriend introduced me to omgyes.com.
Yes.
I found that really fascinating. Actually, it was really fun working through everything on there.
This is an app which basically explores all the different ways women orgasm, all the ways different women can masturbate. And it's sort of like it's like a learning tool, isn't it?
Not only is it hugely educational, it's hilariously graphic.
And Emma Watson's a fan.
She's like backing champions.
Matt's got this recent trip away at the weekend with a bunch of pals. We went to Brighton. And he tried to introduce all the boys that were with on the trip to them. What's it called again? OMG.
OMG, yes. Yeah, it didn't have, like, it wasn't, like, too warmly received, but I think there was a lot of,
really?
Like, there was a lot of, like, held back intrigue.
Mm. So they're all going to go home on Saturday.
Yeah. There was a lot of, like, oh, that's a bit weird, mate, and then they were all clear on the bus.
Like, so writing down the name, yeah.
But it's really great that you're taking an interest. So what we discussed in the last section of the show was about kind of getting men to get more interested in female orgasm and not just accepting that a girl wasn't going to come in sex and that's not okay and that our pleasure is really important.
I think it's strange because I always think, like, obviously, like, being gay and thinking back to, like, when I was, like, interested in women, I think that my attitude to sex has changed so much in the kind of the years that I've been sleeping with men and the kind of been out and stuff, in the sense that I think it would be really interesting in a way to go back and to if I was ever interested in women again or if it's something that was to develop, because you do kind of, I think you, as a man, you really do have, there is a real pressure in terms of not, you don't really take into consideration the other partner's, like, kind of enjoyment in it and, like, what they are, and you don't really have all these kind of the tools or the understanding of like, are they enjoying it? Whereas, like, with a man, like, it's obviously so much more easier. Like, there's a very clear indication when someone's had a good time. And then you're like, right, that's that done. But then obviously with women, I think, and they don't really have that kind of communication. And it's also, from my own, like, personal experience, like, it's just much less sexy and enjoyable if you don't really have a kind of channel of communication where you can talk about it.
But you're right, actually, that it's a fundamental difference that we don't always talk about, that with men, there is literal evidence.
Yeah, that,
like, if there's no erection and there's no ejaculation, then something hasn't worked. Whereas with women, there isn't, like, because you can be dry and very turned on. Women aren't always wet when they're aroused.
How, Max, how easy do you find it to talk about sex, like, with your partner? Like, do you find that your partners have often been quite nervous about talking about it? And how do you create that dialogue?
Oh, it's interesting. Varies from person to person. I had one girlfriend who just had never had good sex. She'd had one or two relationships before ours, never had good sex, and just assumed that it was unenjoyable. Mm. And maybe it's because she didn't have the right emotional connection with that person either, but when we were having sex, it was brilliant, and she actually really opened up, and she was like, I didn't know it could actually be nice and fun, and we started talking about it and exploring her side of things.
That's really lovely, but really sad.
It's so sad.
I think my story, I'd say, is pretty similar, though. I also kind of at a young age had decided that I wasn't someone that was going to enjoy
sex.
I'm just not a sexual person. Actually, I think it is a case that you find the right person who gives you that time and you completely change how you see it.
Another friend from uni, they've been they're now sort of 26, 27. They've been in a couple since they were 14, and they thought the same until they were in their 20s and they realised everyone else was really enjoying it, and they then started to learn about each other, and then they just realise much later.
Yeah. But I guess if you start at 14, because I don't know about anybody else, but my sex life was not brilliant when I was 14. and I remember boys being, I remember some boys saying, like, oh, I fingered this other girl, we were like probably in year 10, she came 4 times, and I was like, oh my god, it's so beautiful, do you think that's even possible?
Yeah.
You sweet little angel. Yeah. And then I guess if you never progress any further than that, because you never have to, and you don't sort of up each other's games...
Yeah.
And you could end up like that. It's quite tricky, isn't it?
It's amazing the kind of absolute shite that you pick up, though, when you're in high school. You're like, right, this is what I've got to do. I've got to have, like, 45 minutes, and then that's it, done. It's just like, I think that's more.
And I think also for girls, like, not even knowing what an orgasm actually feels like. So you can really convince yourself of things that didn't
happen. If it felt nice for a minute, that was an orgasm.
Yeah, like, definitely.
I have a question now. Seeing as you said that you slept with men and women... I've been told by a very close friend of mine who is bi that men and women give head very differently.
Yeah.
Is that true? And if so, how?
So I'm 25, so almost 26, and I, the last time I slept with a woman, I was 21, 22, just for context. But the difference is, I think, is that like a lot of the women that I slept with I probably didn't have as much experience as I have certainly like kind of now with like men, for instance. And I think the difference is that women approach it as a foreign object, and which obviously it is. Yeah. It's totally fair. Like, you know, you don't have one. You may have limited or different experience of different penises or that kind of thing. Whereas men just unfundamentally understand like what it is and where it's sensed. Well, having said that, it doesn't mean that necessarily men are always better at women than giving head. Some of them are absolutely atrocious. But
really?
Like,
honestly,
and it's just like that's really far too. You can't give it that hard. Like, it doesn't work like that. Stop. Pause. And like, it's just it's an absolute nightmare when you suddenly have someone who, because you don't want to be rude and be like, that's awful. Like, stop. But then obviously, I think especially when you get like a partner, like you can always like subtly improve and sort of by teaching them things. But then the thing with the differences of women, I think, is that they just, it's a total foreign object, so like they don't know like the head is much more sensitive or whatever. And I remember, I mean, I was in high school, but when I was 16, I got a hand job from this girl and she grabbed it like that.
Oh, because you read about that combo.
Like, it was basically just like then. Just, oh, it was absolutely.
To put that into context, that was a claw motion.
That was the arcade
this is,
claw.
This is a famous Cosmo sex tip that you should put your hand over a penis like you're juicing a lemon on a lemon squeezer and then twist it.
But that's a lie. That's when women are being defrauded by these idiots in these women's magazines. No offense.
No, it's Cosmo. So true. I'm a sex writer and I would never suggest that.
Honestly,
penises
it's like,
are not lemons.
Is it true the other way around though? So like the women who have had head from both man and a woman, is it better from the woman?
Interesting. Have you?
I've done both. I think again it's the same thing. It very much depends on the person. I've had incredible head from women and incredible head from men, and very bad from both. I think women tend to know exactly how they like it and assume you'll like it the same way.
I think that's fair.
So because you understand, and with some women like very very small, very intense motions on the clitoris. Some women like kind of go round the clitoris. Some women like penetration. So I think if it's probably the best oral sex I've had from women has been from women who like oral sex the same way that I like it, the same way they do.
But that's true of all sex, really, because like you can never compare like relationship sex to one night stand sex, can you? Because
you need
time to get to know what everybody, what each person enjoys and likes.
But then you've got that incredible, because I only have one night stand in my entire life, but my main takeaway from it is that the sex was shit. He also kept trying to take the condom off, which is illegal. I kept taking him out of the packet and being like, put this back on or we stop.
I thought that's horrible.
I had to be like sex monitor.
That's so fucking weird.
He's like, I don't have anything. And I was like, you haven't even asked me if
that
I
doesn't
do.
Matter.
I was like, and then
so you might not want to get pregnant.
Well, no, now my new thing, then was like when he's taken it off the third time, I went, wait, sorry, I didn't realize you were children together. And he was like, no, put the fucking condom back on.
He does not sound like a catch.
I could have been riddled. I could have been absolutely seething with diseases. I'm not, but I could have been.
It's also the fact that, like, giving the instructions, like, just do as you're told.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, also, you've consented for one type of sex, not all time. But sorry, my point about that was, apart from the stealth thing, the sex was terrible, but the excitement of being with somebody totally new who I didn't know was very, very high.
Mm.
And that's the only thing I think one night stands have on relationship sex. Otherwise, relationship sex
is that unknown.
Yeah.
So I think there's an element as well where if you have a partner who's a casual partner that you don't know, there can also be an element of uninhibitedness to it that doesn't come, that comes with like, there's no emotion that complicates it. There's no, if you're very clear, because they're using like dating apps like Grindr and stuff, like if you're having the hookup, there's a very clear
etiquette.
Not transactional, because there is obviously transactional in a sense, but there's also an uninhibitedness that comes with it, because you can be like, this is what I want, this is what I'm into. Very frank.
Yeah. Mm.
And if, particularly if you're not necessarily someone who's very comfortable having that kind of conversation about the sex you enjoy in a relationship that's complicated by like emotions and stuff. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's great and that's what most people would aspire to, but it has an element of uninhibitedness that can sometimes make it exciting and liberating.
I think that's very true. I think this is, we both got into long-term relationships just before Tinder was a thing. Grindr already was, but obviously not really for us.
Yeah.
But so I think we really missed out on that transactional tick box. Tell people what you like.
Yeah, we were
I slightly wish I'd experienced
making
it.
Pasta and watching Netflix. Shame, we missed out.
But the thing is, because we talked about this, the things like the difference with, you know, hookup apps, which are, I think it's much more straightforward for men who sleep with men than it is necessarily for heterosexual couples. I don't know necessarily if... Because I was never single and interested in women at the time when there was a lot of, like, dating apps and stuff. So I just find it quite interesting.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Guys, thank you so much.
No worries, guys.
Jio and Max are our men of the week.
I genuinely feel like I learn a lot.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This has been The Climax. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen to more, don't forget to subscribe and rate and review so more people can find it. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, I'm at Jelly Malin.
And I'm at Rebecca CN Reed. And please let us know if there's anything else you'd like to hear, anything you think we should be doing, anything you'd like to hear less of. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
We will be back next Monday with another episode.
Been a Candy Store production, hosted by Angelica Malin and Rebecca Reed, produced by Van Connor. Sex with OS by Mobile Steam Unit appears under Creative Commons 3.0. Visit Candy Store Productions at candystoreproductions.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.